He had volunteered for the Star Mission, knowing that he would be leaving everything he had known behind him forever. Good riddance, he told himself. He kept his hurts to himself. He bore a scar that he never showed, an inner wound that bled every day, every night, every minute. If they knew, he told himself, it would kill me. They would all hate me. So he stood leaning against the bar, alone in the middle of the swirling, dancing, laughing throng.
"Hey, Skyhook, why so glum?"
It was Larry Untermeyer, a fellow anthropologist, short and a little pudgy, with a lopsided grin on his round face.
"Come on, Brad, join the party, for Christ's sakes. You look like a flickin' totem pole."
Larry gripped Brad's wrist and towed him out among the dancers.
"God knows we're not going to be partying like this for a long time," Larry shouted over the din of the music and the crowd. "So enjoy yourself."
And he left Brad standing amidst the dancers. Brad could sense people eyeing him, a solitary beanpole poking up in the middle of the dancers. For several agonizingly long moments, Brad just stood there, trying to think of what he should be doing. Then a dark-haired, good-looking young woman glided up to him and held out both her hands. With a smile, she asked, "Like to dance?" Brad made himself smile back at her and took her hands in his. She was tiny, not even up to his shoulder. Brad recognized the game. His erstwhile buddies had talked the woman into getting Brad to dance. They thought it would be funny to see the Skyhook stumbling across the floor with a tiny partner. Brad took her firmly in his arms and stepped out in rhythm to the blaring music. He felt a trifle awkward, but calling up the memory of his schoolday dance lessons, he quickly caught the beat. "Just don't step on her feet," he warned himself. Craning her neck to look up at him, she said,
"My name's Felicia Portman. Biology."
Brad saw that she was really pretty. Gray eyes, deep and sparkling. Trim figure.
"I'm..."
"Brad McDaniels, I know," Felicia said. "Anthropology."
"Right." And Brad realized that they all must know the beanpole that stuck up above everybody's head. The song ended, and she led him out of the crowd of dancers toward the tables arranged along the side wall of the auditorium. Felicia pointed a manicured finger to a table that was already half-filled.
"Some of my bio teammates," she said.
Brad followed her and folded himself into a chair beside her as she introduced the others. A robot trundled up and took their drink orders.
"Lime juice?" asked one of the other guys.
Brad nodded. "I'm sort of allergic to alcohol."
"Allergies can be fixed," said one of the others.
"It's not an allergy, really," Brad said, trying to keep his face from showing the embarrassment he felt. "Not in the medical sense."
"Ah, a psychological problem."
"Sort of." Felicia changed the subject.
"What's an anthropologist doing on this mission? Why do we have an anthro team anyway?"
"Yeah, they stuck you people on board the same day we left Earth orbit, like you were a last-minute idea. Besides, the creatures down on the planet aren't human. What's an anthropologist going to do with them?"
Brad answered, "We're not here to study the aliens. We're here to study you."
"Us?
What do you mean?" "The people here on this ship form a compact group isolated from other human societies," Brad explained. "It's an ideal laboratory to study the evolution of a unique society. All of the star missions have anthropology teams with them."
"I'll be damned. I don't know if I like being the subject of a study."
"Well, you are," said Brad, "whether you like it or not." The looks on their faces around the table ranged from curious amusement to downright hostility. Brad said, "We're only a small team, 12 people. I'm the junior most."
"We'd all better be on our best behavior," Felicia said with a grin.
Several of them laughed, and the tension eased away. As the party finally wound down, Brad walked Felicia to her quarters, squeezed her hand gently as he said goodnight, then left her at her door and went along the curving corridors until he found his own compartment. He stripped and slid into bed, the only light in the room coming from the wall screen, which showed the planet they were orbiting. Green from pole to pole, except for some grayish wrinkles of mountains and a few glittering seas here and there. Hands clasped behind his head, Brad dreaded the inevitable sleep and the inescapable dream that it brought. He recalled the poem that was never far from his consciousness. They cannot scare me with their empty spaces between stars, on stars where no human race is. I have it in me so much nearer home to scare myself with my own desert places. Planetology. Brad saw Professor Kossoff a few paces ahead of him, striding purposefully along the corridor, a sturdy, compact bear of a man, marching as if he were leading a parade. He caught up with the staff's director in two long-legged strides. "Good morning, sir," said Brad. Kossoff seemed almost startled. He looked up at Brad, frowning slightly, then, "Ah, McDaniels, isn't it? Anthropology." Implanted communicator, Brad figured. Instant link with the ship's master computer. "Yes, sir," he answered. "I've been assigned to sit in on the planetology team's meeting this morning." Kossoff broke into a slightly malicious grin. "Studying the tribe and its native habitat, eh?" "That's what anthropologists do, sir." "Fine, fine," Kossoff said airily. "I've decided to attend their meeting myself." For 2 months, the scientific staff had been studying the planet and its inhabitants, remotely. Surveillance satellites had been established in orbit around both Mithra Alpha and Gamma. The satellites were loaded with sensors that measured the alien world's atmospheres, Alpha's all-encompassing ocean, Gamma's globe-spanning forests, and particularly the primitive villages that dotted Gamma's landscape. The life forms in the planet-wide ocean of Mithra Alpha showed no obvious signs of intelligence, although they seemed to communicate among themselves like the whales of Earth. Odysseus's scientists concentrated their attention on Mithra Gamma. Only the leaders of the planetology team were present for this meeting, yet there were more than 24 men and women filing into the conference room. Brad watched them from the door as they took their seats at the long polished conference table. They assembled themselves in what seemed like a random, unhierarchical pattern, except for the department chief, who sat himself at the head of the table, of course. "What are the relationships among these people?" Brad asked himself. "What's their pecking order?" He saw that Kossoff casually pulled out a chair for himself halfway down the table, next to an attractive blonde. But all eyes shifted from the department head to Kossoff as he sat down. There was one non-human member of the conference, the ship's master computer. It contained all the data that had been amassed so far. The holographic displays along the walls of the room all bore the same computer-generated human face, bland-looking and inoffensive. It had been drawn by the ship's psychologists to be as attractive as possible to the multiracial staff. Golden, tawny skin, slightly almond cast to the eyes, high cheekbones, downy hair of sandy brown, and smiling, always smiling, so that the humans it worked with and for would find it friendly no matter what it reported. Brad almost smiled back at it as he took a chair near the foot of the table. The chairman, Dr. Olaf Petersen, a dour-looking, lean and pale Scandinavian, called the meeting to order. Then he said in his slightly nasal voice, "The master computer has analyzed the orbital data we have obtained so far and has some very interesting, even disturbing, conclusions to share with us." Without preamble, the synthesized face of the master computer said flatly, "This planetary system is unstable." One of the women halfway down the table challenged, "How could an intelligent species arise on a planet that has an unstable orbit? It takes billions of years for intelligence to develop." Brad noticed that she looked at Kossoff as she spoke. The master computer's avatar replied blandly, "The system was not always unstable. Some incident altered the orbits of the planets Beta and Gamma into unstable elliptical paths and pushed Mithra Alpha into its current star-hugging orbit. Very likely there were other planets in the system that were either ejected into interstellar space by the incident or perhaps pushed into the star itself." "An incident, you say?" Kossoff said to the face on the wall screen. "How did it happen? And when?" The computer's avatar replied, "Insufficient data. It is clear that something has disrupted the planet's orbits, probably slightly more than 100,000 Earth years ago.
But what that something was is unknown at this time. One of the younger men asked, Will the system break up, MC?
MC? Kossoff asked.
Looking slightly embarrassed, the young man said, Master Computer. MC? It sort of humanizes it a little.
Kossoff smiled at him. Yes, I suppose it does.
Brad nodded to himself and thought, He's trying to go a step farther. The psychologists drew a human face for the computer. He's given it a name. Makes it easier to work with the machine, apparently.
Fodder for his notes, and eventually the report he would write.
MC resumed. Planet Gamma is now approaching its perihelion. The closest it gets to its star, Kossoff interjected. Unperturbed, MC continued. Once it passes its perihelion, it will begin its long swing away from Mithra. Conditions on the planet's surface will become colder, even frigid.
Will the aliens be able to survive their winter? The department chief asked.
They apparently have, in the past. But Kossoff said, We'd better get our work done quickly, before conditions on the planet's surface become too difficult for us.
That would be a wise course to take, said the master computer.
Dr. Peterson asked, Is it really necessary to make contact with the natives? Why can't we plant the energy screen devices in uninhabited locations around the planet and leave the aliens undisturbed?
Kossoff shook his head vigorously.
To come 200 light-years to a planet inhabited by intelligent aliens and not make contact with them? Unthinkable!
A woman with thickly curled brick-red hair sitting across the table from Kossoff objected.
But the shock of contact could harm them. That's what the psych team believes.
That's a risk we'll have to take, Kossoff replied, his eyes fixed on her. We are not going to throw away this opportunity.
A man sitting at Peterson's right said,
Besides, suppose we plant the energy screen generators and leave without contacting them, and they discover the equipment and try to tinker with it. They could blow up half a continent, for God's sake.
Not very likely, said the man next to him,
but possible.
We could put the generators in orbit around the planet instead of on its surface.
That's possible, Peterson agreed.
Kossoff said, Anthropologists have built up protocols about contacting isolated tribes on Earth, like the hunter-gatherers discovered back in the 20th century.
That was nearly 200 years ago, Peterson objected.
Yes, but the protocols make sense even today, Kossoff responded. They found that in some cases contact is less harmful to a primitive society than leaving those people isolated.
In any event, the redhead said, contact is a very delicate matter.
Agreed, said Kossoff. But we are going to make contact.
Biology. Brad sat alone in the main cafeteria, as usual, munching on a slightly overdone soy burger. Something disrupted this planetary system, he repeated to himself for about the 40th time. Planet Gamma is heading for a deep freeze. According to MC, the planet's been following this orbit for at least 100,000 years, so the aliens must be able to survive their long winter. But based on the orbital data they had calculated, Gamma's glacial winter lasts almost 40 Earth years. How can the aliens survive that with the primitive technology they've shown? Then a new thought struck him. Maybe they have only a primitive technology because every time they get started developing a higher one, the damned winter closes in on them and everything freezes.
Interesting, he thought. Let's see what the biologists have to say about that.